I think Alberta has bent over absolutely backwards to try to accommodate 10 years of willingness by Ottawa to shut down our oil and gas sector and effectively shut down 15 to 20% of the country's GDP. How's that going, by the way, when it comes to our debt and deficit?
Welcome to The Fighter with Chris Sims. I am Chris Sims. I'm the Alberta Director for the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. We're always fighting for lower taxes, less waste, and more accountable government. We've got a great show for you. First off, if you haven't done so yet, please like this video. Remember to share it with your friends, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and most importantly, it's the Christmas time and holiday season right now. And I wanted to thank you for making us a part of your day. If you're feeling alone, you're not alone. We're right here with you. Thanks for being here with us. All right, we've got a great show for you because, of course, the federal government is still kind of sort of thinking about rolling along with its ban on the sale of gasoline and diesel vehicles, what I would otherwise call normal cars and trucks. Okay, this is wrong, okay, because it is a crazy waste of money. Like, we cannot afford this. Canada has unmoney. We do not have the infrastructure for this. We do not have the charging stations for this. We can't afford this. Also, the subsidies that our levels of governments were handing out to these vehicle manufacturers to make these battery-powered cars, gross, crazy waste of money. And also, the government shouldn't be telling you what kind of car you choose to purchase. So we've got an absolute rock star of a guest on here for you next. Dan McTagg is coming right up. Okay, joining me now is Dan McTagg. He is with Canadians for Affordable Energy. Dan is the guy I go to when we are in the trenches for things like, how much is the second carbon tax costing us? Can you do your guru work? How much is gas going to be tomorrow? He's usually pretty good at that too. And he has been a fighter on fighting the so-called EV mandate, which is a ban on the sale of regular cars and trucks in Canada. Dan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Chris, it's great to be here. Thanks very much for the introduction as well. Wow, wonderful time.
It really is. It's time to celebrate. In all seriousness, it's really special. I'm glad to be able to see you over the Christmas season. So thank you so much.
Good to be here with your viewers as well. And those who are left alone, we're definitely thinking about them and they're here with us.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Okay. We've had some good news, I think. We're seeing companies now backing away from this whole EV mandate thing with the production of battery powered vehicles. Again, if people choose to use their own money to buy such things, or if a company of its own free will wants to make and sell them at a profit, that's their business. My issue is this crazy government involvement and how much it's really going to cost us. Where are we right now with this whole EV mandate thing? Carney delayed it by a year, but what is that doing practically here?
Well, he spent some time saying we do a review on this, and all comments had to be in by the early part of November. And we had an opportunity to say, well, hey, yes, suspended, but it isn't gone. It doesn't take effect in 2 weeks on January 1st, where 20% of all vehicles that are sold on any given car lot had to be EVs. That's been held off for 365 more days. But it's not clear at this point what he plans to do. This is a Liberal Party and a prime minister and a leader who is very heavily invested in net zero. And of course, the many points from that policy, including carbon taxes, including emissions caps, including blocking pipelines, including, of course, electric vehicle mandate, basically forcing you into a vehicle, whether you like it or not, otherwise don't drive kind of attitude. And it appears that the biggest conflict isn't so much with Canadians who are walking away from these things, especially since they can't mooch a few bucks from the government to buy them. The conflict is in the Liberal Party. These people are still think it's 2015 and that we can somehow reinvent the automotive sector at a time in which we've lost tens of thousands of jobs and billions of dollars in borrowed money pursuing batteries and plants that no one wants to buy. Reality, Chris, you and I, you know, 8-10 years ago talked about this, but reality is starting to bite hard. The wokesters out there who thought this was a cool way to proceed, folks like me who had spent not only a lot of time in the center of government and in politics, but worked in the public relations sector of one of the largest companies in Canada, Toyota Canada. I realize how ridiculously naive it was to suggest that we could somehow wave a magic wand and get everybody to drive what I said respectfully were over glorified golf carts operating on batteries, which like my little cell phone here in the middle of December, January, and February, doesn't work very well when you leave them out for a couple of hours in the cold climate in Canada. It really is.
You know, I think you and I first in the day when I was working on Parliament Hill, I was a producer for Mike Duffy Live, which was the daily show there for the Bell Network at CTV. And we used to get you on as a guest because you were a straight shooter. You were with the Liberal Party then. You were a member of Parliament. Yeah. Wow. You were sounding the alarm bells, to your credit, whenever we would have these big global summits and these up with people things, and we'd have our politicians jet, I will point out, burning jet fuel to the thing. And then they would start dictating what we can and can't do. And it was even then we were hearing rumblings about carbon taxes and rumblings about forcing people to switch, such a silly little word, right? Switch over to battery powered vehicles. Again, if they invented dilithium crystals tomorrow and we were all able to do so economically and of our free will, like give her, that's great. I want affordable energy, as your great backdrop says. But it just was not working. The rubber was not hitting the road. What do you think it was that finally made these companies say, you know what, this isn't worth it for us? Is it just that they're taking a bath on all these losses?
I'm older enough to remember and had worked with worked in the campaign in 1979 where the candidate on the other side was this guy.
Oh, my goodness. That's going back.
Granddaddy of the first Brazil conference, yep. And Canada had to do, and we had to go buy billions of acres of land in Brazil, rainforest in Brazil, a guy who ran Petro-Canada. We have been trying to find ways to minimize and to control the public in terms of how they behave and what they can use and how they can improve their standard of living. And the plan and the plot has been around for a long, long time. I mean, I'm going to give you something that goes back to the late 1970s, so 50 years. But even before that, Club of Rome and things like that, we know that there is a group of people out there of which people like Mark Carney are extraordinarily well associated with, who've tried to find cute, trendy ways to throttle the civilization by basically saying, you will conform and you will do what we want. And we want you to drive these things and we want you to eat these things and we want you to be taxed so that you don't have these things. The reality is that this kind of restriction of freedom, of improvement of the human condition is really what they're really negative about. And it's not lost on anybody that while making recommendations to how other people can live, they've done very well and ingratiated themselves with tax money by trying to bully people or maybe intimidate people or make people feel guilty about what's happened. The reality has now become very clear in 2025 that grifters and other elitists have really no measure or no truck when it comes to ordaining how society should proceed. What they have done, however, is created a stunting of the growth of our economy and made a lot of people think twice about the future of this country over the past several years in the way I've never seen, not certainly since the Great Depression.
Amen. If we can look at some of the details here and the money, say if they suddenly waved a magic wand, and all of a sudden the vehicles we have parked in our driveways and garages were no longer internal combustion engines. Bibbidi bobbidi boo, they're now a battery powered vehicle. The energy required for this was shocking. I did the very rough math and like bare bones, Dan, bare bones. We would need like 13 new CANDU nuclear reactors just for the current vehicle fleet. That's not even touching like new vehicles or trucks. I'm not even talking about long-haul trucking. I'm talking about privately owned passenger vehicles. And we have unmoney. Each one of those CANDU nuclear reactors costs around $13 billion to build and at least 10 years. And we're not building a whole lot of stuff here in Canada. So we just did not have the money or the juice to do this, even if we wanted to. Now, shameless plug. I'm just so passionate about this. This is our new t-shirt with the Taxpayers Federation.
I love it.
To stop the gas and diesel vehicle ban. Like, to me, this is a huge waste of money. And it's also just a huge encroachment by government on the lives of people. You know, everybody's individual life is so complicated. that it's sometimes a big task for just them to manage it. The notion that some bureaucrat in Ottawa can dictate something as simple as how you get around and how your heater works in your car is just so intrusive. It drives me crazy. Where do you see this going? Like, is a year enough delay? Is that an indicator that this idea is dead? Or is he just going to try to figure out a way to make this become a reality? Because I can't get this book out of my head, Dan. I read Mark Carney's book when he was the UN Special Envoy on climate, blah, blah, blah. Okay. All through this book, it's how much he loves types of carbon taxes. And he often refers to things like, I'm paraphrasing, natural gas powered power plants and vehicles, like normal gasoline and diesel powered vehicles. He calls them stranded assets in the future over and over again. So where do you see this going? Is this a year long delay, meaning it's going to be gone?
I see Mark Carney as having almost been charged under U.S. antitrust legislation. He was coming awfully close. Had he not become the leader of the Liberal Party, he would have been nailed badly in the same way the Rockefellers were 100 years ago and other groups that have tried to game the system. Mark Carney was trying to basically remove capital from getting to oil and gas producers. That's fine. And in trendy Canada, we might accept that because we can all go, eat bugs and maybe live off of the state of nature, living in with animal skins and eating acorns.
But taxpayer-funded crickets, Dan. Taxpayer-funded crickets.
Exactly.
Yes, sorry.
Well, I mean, seriously.
No,
yeah.
That's a
I
real
mean,
thing. Go for it.
It was, yeah, and we wound up paying for it. But in the United States, they do something called triple damages. So the American Petroleum Institute would have turned around and said, you know, our industry is worth $2 trillion a year. You, Mr. Carney, and your phonies, run by Michael Bloomberg and the rest of the United Nations, would have been subject to a $6 trillion hit. So you know what? I hate the expression. He short-arsed it out of there. He knew full well what was going to happen. So he's decided he's had to back off. Send it back off because reality is very, very simple. People can't afford this anymore. This is nonsense. It was nonsense to begin with. To suggest a molecule like CO2 is somehow crippling the world and is a pollutant itself is fundamentally, scientifically, and economically dishonest. And what has been now very clear is that Mark Carney's had to beat a path on almost every single front, beat a return to where we used to be 10 to 15 years ago. Whether he's the man to do it or not is deliciously ironic, but the reality for many Canadians is that, Chris, at the number of people who are now saying, yeah, we do want pipelines. It doesn't matter where, but damn well build these things. 10 years ago, oh no, we're worried about, climate change and all sorts of other nonsense. Canada has changed. Reality has changed. Mark Carney had better change, but it may not be enough because I don't think anybody can trust him, given the book that you've just shown. It looks like he's basically a snake in a suit trying to do indirectly that which he has been able to do directly and trying to be the man about change. And, of course, that's not going to happen in a country like now where every net zero policy they've advanced is now in complete retreat. And whether it's not, it's only a matter of time, like the automotive EV mandates, I think, like the climate policies on carbon taxes, like so many other policies. They're about to be put on the 30-yard line and punted right through the end zone.
I want to dig into that before we go, because I actually haven't asked you, so I don't know how you're going to answer this question. What you think about this memorandum of understanding that Prime Minister Mark Carney flew out here to Calgary and signed with my premier, Alberta Premier Danielle Smith. Now, in defense of the premier, she really wants pipelines. She wants to get rid of the production cap. She wants to get rid of the green energy restriction on our power plants. And I think she wants that stuff so hard that she kind of sat down with Carney. I'll put it that way. And Carney came out immediately after signing that MOU and gloated to the media saying his industrial carbon tax here in Alberta is now gonna be 6 times higher. I talked to Jack Mintz about this, and he was warning two things. He was warning that it is going to cost people more money at the end. It is not just businesses that are going to magically eat this cost. And he said, as an economist, that it could add around $10 US per barrel to the production cost of oil here in Alberta. Now, that's a bit out of my wheelhouse. Like, and I haven't asked you, what do you think about this MOU?
Well, I think the MOU is sort of a line in the sand. I mean, I think Alberta has bent over absolutely backwards to try to accommodate 10 years of willingness by Ottawa to shut down our oil and gas sector and effectively shut down 15 to 20% of the country's GDP. How's that going, by the way, when it comes to our debt and deficit?
Brutal.
But that aside, Jack Mintz is correct. One of the first observations I made was that $130 a ton going from 95 as a carbon industrial carbon tax would add $10.35 to the barrel of Canadian oil. So if it's selling at 45, which makes it very attractive compared to WTI, which is West Texas Intermediate, the US benchmark, which is at 57, you now see almost parity. Then the cost of sequestration, they say carbon capture and underground storage, that could add another $3 to $4 a barrel. Not to mention the many restrictions and guidelines that have been put in place that could make Canadian barrels of oil that much more expensive. Although I make the argument that, it's heavier oil. The world wants it. Why? You can't produce diesel with U.S. tight light shale gas. You cannot. And people say, well, the United States is producing lots. And Trump can talk about he doesn't need our oil. Baloney. You don't have a military. You don't have diesel. You don't have agriculture. You don't have mining. Diesel is the global workhorse.
Oh, yeah.
And the only stuff that really produces well is a Canadian heavy oil or equivalent Venezuelan oil or what you might be able to get in other parts of the world, Nevis or Mexico. All risky, all not as good. But to my concern, the MOU, I think, is if there's no taker between now and July 1st, the deal is over. And that will be extraordinary disappointment for the Indigenous groups that have signed on to this. And for the second time, we'll be left empty-handed by a handful of green miscreants, usually funded by the Rockefellers, Tides, and other organizations out of the United States to try to block it. I think we have to get rid of Bill C-49, the anti-tanker ban. I mean, if that's not gone, I don't know how you're going to be able to get it from point from the terminal all the way out to the various Asian Pacific markets that want Canadian oil. And by the way, have the heavy capacity, have the ability to upgrade our oil, whether that's Korea, whether that's Japan, whether that's Indonesia. They want our oil. There's no doubt they want it. But if Canada's going to be Pollyannish about this and we're going to have obstacles like we saw BC do last time with the TMX costing us $50 billion. By the way, I keep saying to myself, British Columbia owes Canada $50 billion for all their, but we'll use every tool in the toolbox to block something that had already been given the imperator of approval by the Canadian government. Now, of course, the argument is that they may actually go through the United States. That would be deliciously ironic in light of what Nutrien had to do with respect to potash.
Yep.
If our future is heavily tied to getting things done because we can get to the United States, I can only imagine this will only add to greater tensions within the Federation as to why the hell we want to keep staying within an arrangement that punishes Alberta, that punishes our resource sector, while at the same time providing tons of grift for other provinces through equalization who are taking advantage of this country.
Yep, I just saw the bill and billions of dollars going east here from the productive West again, and not so much as a thank you very much. Did you just say that TMX costs us $50 billion now? Last I looked, it was 44. Like 37. What?
Nope. $6 billion to buy it, $44 to build it. So it's not, I mean, they haven't done the complete accounting for it. Some people are saying 32, and then it was 44. It's closer to $50 billion is what it cost Canadians and the taxpayer to fork over because we decided we're going to be cute and trendy and let every Tom, Dick, and Harry whack job organization go out there to assail it. And that was the Horgan government, its Attorney General David Eby, using every tool in the toolbox. Chris, you and I were right front and center with that. I fought every one of these guys personally on every media at the time.
I was right there in Burnaby. And, yep. Oh, my gosh.
Exactly. And I took no nonsense from these guys. A couple of stations up in Kelowna, I actually went head-to-head with Horgan. I beat the snot out of him, and God rest his soul. But, I mean, he was wrong. And that was wrong to do what they did, was to basically deny Canadian energy exports, especially when the federal government had given its signature of approval. No wonder Kinder Morgan said, we're going to sue your backside, and you are going to lose. Thank God Bill Morneau was still somewhat involved in the private sector and realized it was a slam dunk. They were going to lose. Gave the $6 billion, bought out Kinder Morgan. And to build this project with all the nonsensical red tape and every kind of fish or every kind of nesting bird having been taken into consideration, it wound up costing Canadians 50 billion dollars. That's money out of your pocket. That's money that doesn't go to hospitals. That money doesn't go to our pensions. That's money that doesn't go back into our infrastructure because a couple of green fanatics from south of the border, using our charitable status and our goodwill in this country, have really jammed the nation. And by the way, send a message to the rest of the world. This is too risky a place to put any money. No wonder it takes 138 pennies to buy a US dollar. You have compromised by allowing green fanatics and the left of the Liberal Party and its friends in the Bloc mm-hmm. and the Greens and the NDP to destroy the financial credibility and fiscal viability of this country. And that's why it's going to happen at MOU. I think the damage is already done. The damn people on the left in BC know exactly how much damage they've done because no one wants to invest in Canada. It's too risky a place to do business. Kinder Morgan sent that message to us 6 years ago.
I was in the Fraser Valley when it was being twinned, and I spoke to people literally out loud with my face whose job it was to like count snails. Like, I'm not joking. And it's right to, for folks who don't know, okay, who have never seen a pipeline, this area was already owned by Kinder Morgan and then now Trans Mountain, ergo the Canadian government. It's like a few feet wide. It's a clearing in the woods and then it gets grassed over. There's literally deer eating wildflowers on top of it. Like, it's this tiny little strip of land where they're just twinning the pipeline. And by the way, they had crazy amounts of jobs that were working on twinning that pipeline. By not having proper pipeline capacity in Canada alone, we are losing out on like $13 billion just in the income taxes. Just the income taxes. It's not even the property taxes or the royalties. Lastly, Dan, I wanted to leave on, try to be a hopeful note here. So you say right now we have this deadline coming up of July 1st. We have this MOU of we're waiting for a taker. We're waiting for a suitor to come to the ball and invite us to dance. Okay. Can we do this if we get smart, knowledgeable, charismatic people to go do a charm offensive in Washington, D.C. with all the right human beings while, say, I don't know, signing a new trade deal with our biggest trading partner instead of getting into this ridiculous mainstream media, government-funded journalism fight about elbows being up? Like, I'm so done with this. Is there a chance that we could find some adults in the room, either in or out of government? You mentioned Bill Morneau. Are there people in your world who could go get this money coming into Canada in time?
I'm more of the belief now that Canada and Alberta would have a real promising shot by simply saying, and we'll take the pipeline to the U.S. border, and the U.S. takes it out to Washington State, where you have four or five refineries. And so that may not be great in terms of the discount, but it would obviously mean that the federal government may not have to, the government of Alberta may not have to wait for all of these naysayers and all of these people who present themselves as having some kind of veto or block to this particularly important piece of pipeline. Look, every pipeline will equal 20, maybe even as much as $25 billion in net economic activity to Canada at a time in which we are suffering from a $78 billion deficit, yeah. $1.4 trillion federally. Taxpayers Federation has done all the work on this. Provinces have the same sub-sovereign debt. When we're approaching $2.5 trillion as a ceiling that we have to now start to inflate, we are beggars can't be choosers. We've painted ourselves into a corner. If we don't get Alberta's pipelines built economically, we are going to be in a position that I don't think our country has ever seen since the early 1980s. It'll be a form of economic perdition on a basis that most Canadians will regret the fact that they allowed these guys to make these kind of decisions. So if you're going to step in the way of pipeline, then understand you're stepping in the way of Canada's economic well-being and its future. The interests of the many come before the interests of the selfish few who get very well paid to say no to only things Canadian, because at the end of the day, we need to make sure Alberta prospers. We need to make sure that our energy from Alberta makes it to global markets. Anybody standing in the way for that? Were I Prime Minister, you'd be arrested and we put you in jail until such times as this thing's finally finished and built. If you don't like that, go find another country.
We'll be able to make enough money on it. If we go through the states and we lose that discount, like you were just talking about, and you combine what economist Jack Mintz is warning about, I'm sorry to be a rain cloud, would we still make enough money? Like, would that be worth it if we went through Washington State?
Well, $30 a barrel is a break even for Canadian oil.
Okay.
you can sell it for 45, maybe even, and this way you could tell Ottawa to go fly a kite when it comes to its ridiculous carbon taxes or any other industrial carbon tax.
Oh, there you go. That's right, because you're not doing the MOU stuff. Okay.
Exactly. There's no MOUs, nothing. Alberta can go it alone. And all they need is, I think you'd find a far more willing administration, whether that be the Trump administration or its future, if it should be J.D. Vance. These things can be built in a very short period of time. But I think I'm actually happy it's July 1st, because when Canada says no, I'm pretty sure the United States will say yes. And as I here in Ontario watch the only engine of success in driving our manufacturing, whether that's steel or that's auto manufacturing, continue to crumble, at least I will know one part of the country is going to be doing very well, because nimbly they've been able to get around Ottawa and get around the gatekeepers who pay themselves with your money and mine to go around saying no to building Canada. Without oil and gas, this country is dead in the water. And Alberta knows that if it can get a deal with the United States, it'll at least have enough to survive the sinking ship.
Dan, I think it's time for you and I to take a road trip to Montana and Washington State. Let's go do that.
Let's do it. Beauty Yellowstone. Just don't send me to the train station.
Oh, yeah. Never. All right. Dan McTague, so wonderful to speak with you. Thank you so much for being such an important part of Juno News and this show and fighting for Canadians to have affordable energy. Thank you so much and Merry Christmas.
Chris, it's been my pleasure. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you and to all our viewers and listeners.
Isn't he a gem? Once again, folks, that is Dan McTague. He is with Canadians for Affordable Energy. You might remember back in the day when you needed to know what the gas price was going to be next week or a couple of days from now. Dan was the one that sat there and calculated that, and he was bang on the nose. Guy's got to go to Vegas one of these days. Folks, be sure to head on over to Canadians for Affordable Energy. They have got just a treasure trove of information about everything from carbon taxes to pipelines to this forced battery-powered vehicle mandate, the ban on the sale of gasoline and diesel-powered vehicles. Like, Dan is right there constantly putting the boots to all these things. So go check them out. If you have not done so, please like this video, subscribe to the YouTube channel here on Juno News, and if you can, head on over to Juno News, take out a subscription, because we are not government funded. This is independent journalism with super important conversations. Once again, thank you so much for making us a part of your holiday and Christmas time. I wish you all the best to you and your loved ones.